that the DX17, the a sound sculpture, the art installation, the first ever to be at Doxford, is really, really fantastic and very, very popular. And I really urge you to go and see it. I got to speak to two people, actually. Alicia Gurney, who is the head of planning and engagement. We're going to be listening to her now. And then after that, we'll be listening to the sound composer, Nick Ryan. He's a BAFTA award-winning sound composer. And on his design that he made for the DX17 to commemorate 100 years of Doxford. Now, first of all, we're going to listen to Alicia Gurney, as I said, head of master planning and engagement at Imperial War Museum, Doxford. And I asked Alicia, why did Doxford commission Nick Ryan to build this most amazing sound sculpture?
This year is Doxford's centenary. The ground was cut in October 1917, and we wanted to celebrate the centenary with something surprising and very different to that which we usually present for our visitors. And we know from the research that we've done over the last few years that, in particular, our visitors would really like to experience or have experiences at Doxford which are more physically and emotionally engaging. And so we put together a brief which expressed that. We wanted something immersive and physically and emotionally engaging. We also wanted something which was absolutely grounded in Doxford's history. And we put that brief out to a broad variety of potential creative partners. And Nick's response, his vision came back and instantly resonated with us, because it just fitted what we'd asked for and what our visitors had asked for.
This is a particularly interesting medium, isn't it?
The sound aspect, obviously Nick is a multidisciplinary artist. He's a sound artist and a composer at his core. And the idea of sound leading, if you like, on this experience was of real interest. I think a major part of that is because we have this wonderful collection of stories from Doxford, of the people who lived and worked at Doxford, in audio, in our audio collection. And so it gave us an opportunity to be able to share those more widely than we have done so far with our visitors. But to do it in a completely different way, in a way that we've never done before and is quite unusual across any museum similar to us.
And as you say, this is the first in Doxford Imperial War Museum. Do you think what's the future for the installation, or you're not able to sort of comment on that at the moment?
The future of the installation, we're looking at what happens next. As I've said, much of the sound collection is already part of our full collection, our Imperial War Museum's object collection. We've recorded some new sounds and memories, and those will form part of the collection as well for the long term. In terms of the physical structure, we're looking at what the potential is for that, because obviously one wants to make best use of when one builds things like this, but we need to think about what's possible. It has only been designed for one season, so it may not be possible, but we're certainly going to look at it.
And feedback from the visitors so far has been absolutely amazing, hasn't it? You've had some extraordinary feedback.
It's been really good. We've done quite a bit of testing with our Friends of Doxford members and various at various other points, and the response has been really good. At times, actually, it's been overwhelmingly good, which has been wonderful. And I think this shouldn't be a surprise to us, because we carried out research. We asked visitors what they'd like to see more from with us, and what they'd like to see in the future, and what they wanted from Doxford in the future. And they said they wanted more physically and emotionally engaging experiences. They'd told us that what's really important about Doxford is the real things. Obviously, the difference between museums and the internet and books is that we have the real objects, the real stories, and indeed, when it comes to Doxford, the real historic site. You can't get that anywhere else. And so and the visitors told us that was still very important to them. And so we've delivered on that. And so it shouldn't really be a surprise to us that so far people have been really positive and responded well to it.
That was Alicia Gurney, head of planning and engagement, and I was talking to her earlier on a few weeks ago about the DX17. Now we're going to be hearing from Nick Ryan. I don't know if you noticed, but all the recordings, all the interviews were taking place outside at Doxford, so I really wanted to get some atmosphere there. And as I was listening to Alicia and Nick, it was fantastic. I could hear and see the most amazing planes taking off, taken down, and the Spitfire was around as well. Now, one of these Spitfires was actually in the movie Dunkirk. And so it was really, really very, very atmospheric being there as well. Now, so let's see. So Nick Ryan, so commemorate the centenary of the Imperial War Museum and the beginnings of the RAF Duxford, sound artist Nick Ryan was asked to create a site-specific sound sculpture. Now, I work there and I have to welcome the guests and present the sound sculpture, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And when people come out, they're completely and utterly amazed, and I really urge you to go along to it. They also brought in Kim was brought in as a collaborator to design and produce and install the sculpture and technology. And basically it's 100 lights under the surface of the plane that represents 100 memories, and each light pulses, voices, signals, anecdotes and stories are played through them. Now the signals are interpreted by the visitor, who holds a receiver and a comprising of a light sensor, and you get headphones as well. Now, as the visitors move around between the lights, it has the effect of scanning radio, as the technology powering the receiver is analog. It's incredible. The technology is amazing. Now, I did ask Nick Ryan what inspired him to create the DX17 sound sculpture. So, let's have a listen.
Well, I really wanted to do two things. I wanted to commemorate flying and flight and innovation, which are the things that the basis upon which Duxford exists. And I thought the best way to do that was to create an object which represented that physically. And imagine that was an aircraft-like object, sculpture. But I also wanted to represent the people who have made Duxford what it is and whose lives have been shaped by Duxford. And I thought about all of their thoughts and memories and emotions as a sort of cloud of feelings. And I wondered if I could put that inside this object, almost like a kind of brain full of people's memories, and locate that on site on the hangar base, which is a very special place, and let people kind of experience the memories for themselves.
So from a point of view of the visitor, what are you hoping for them to come out and just sort of say, wow, this is amazing? Are you trying to get some sort of personal memory that they could sort of associate with, or is it you just want to literally get them to see what's been happening over the last 100 years of Duxford?
I want them to create new memories for themselves. But one of the really important things about this experience is that I didn't want to dictate to the visitor what they should feel or discover. There are more than 100 different fragments of time in DX17, and all of them tell very different stories. Some of them are funny, some of them are very profound, but all of them are important in one way or another, and they're all available, but we don't sort of dictate which ones you should listen to. So it's up to you. And I think if you let people curate their own experience, then they'll remember it more.
But you're creating something very, very unique to Duxford, aren't you? It's the first art installation ever. But did you find that you had to persuade them that this was the way forward, or were they quite open about it?
They've been very open. I mean, it's very rare to find an organisation with as much history as Duxford being as open-minded as they have been. And as an artist, to have the combination of such a rich cultural heritage and total freedom is an amazing playground. But with sound, you know, there's always some persuading to do, because sound requires time, and we all know how difficult it is to find the time to do anything. And you can't experience sound unless you listen. And I think we could all be better at listening. And one of the reasons that I work in sound is I think, you know, creating a space in which we contemplate things is really rewarding. So I had to sort of demonstrate that sound was a good way to deliver the collection in a new way. And once I'd explained that idea, I think there was a lot of support for it.
Well, because you also mentioned that sound is memory, isn't it? And that's something you said in the speech yesterday to your introduction. You said sound creates memory. So you're almost creating sound in the DX that is actually moving us forward to another time as well. It's very futuristic, isn't it? And that's something probably visitors are going to find either very exciting or challenging. And that's probably another part of your challenge, was to make sure it works us, basically. Mm. Is that how you felt about it?
Yeah, I mean, sound, you're right, sound is memory, and sounds don't have any meaning unless they're associated with a memory. So I kind of wanted to give people access to other people's memories and hope that they start conversations with them, with each other, in the present day.
You obviously had a fantastic idea, but to make this project work, you had lots of specialists in on this, didn't you?
So Sean is one of a number of different experts who I consulted and brought onto the project. And that's generally how I've worked with all of my projects, is I sort of assemble a team of people who know what they're doing. And Kin designed the sculpture with me and the object that you use to listen to it. There are a team of interaction designers, and with their help I was able to create the shape I'd imagined. And Tom Cecil, who built the sculpture, was able to engineer the problems of how to construct it, how to cover it in fabric, how to assemble all the technology inside, and then all of us kind of came up here 5 weeks ago and assembled it on site and suspended it from the hangar.
But you said that you derive all your ideas when you watch soundless films, and then you devise projects from it. So what happened when you were given this project, and did you come and just sit at Duxford and just listen to the sounds around you?
The sounds in the sculpture were curated by the Imperial War Museum, yeah, Duxford, and the curator here, who I worked with to select 100 memories that represent different sort of key aspects of Duxford's history. So, for example, the Cold War, the Second World War, the First World War, innovation, aircraft restoration. And Rebecca Harding and her team selected audio that already existed in the collection that we could use. And then we added to this by recording interviews with people on site, staff members, for example, reading transcripts, and also interviews with people who work here today as well, who have, you know, interesting personal histories about Duxford. And we assembled all of these, but we also added to the sounds in the sculpture with a soundscape that surrounds the sculpture. And that's a combination of all sorts of different sounds that happen here. For example, the Spitfire, which we recorded on site. Lots of Morse code saying things about Duxford, Duxford's name, Duxford's squadron name, DX-17, and that kind of dresses the whole experience.
And my other question I want to ask you, in 2004, you co-authored two government, I've been doing my research here.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by it because you, one for the future of music and one obviously for the future of radio. What would be your focus now? How would you have changed some of that research? Do you think things have moved on drastically?
I remember the predominant, there were two kind of predominant themes in that research. One was copyright protection, which was a really big issue at that time. Napster had just, happened, and there was this huge rights issue around music sharing, which has now happened to film. And that still hasn't been solved. So it's interesting that the copyright kind of issue of distribution is still a massive problem in society and in culture. And it's had a big impact on the music industry since then, as we predicted. So music industry has become sort of dependent on micropayments and live music. So it's radically changed the way we consume music.
Do you think for the better then, or not?
No, I don't think. Mm. And I think, you know, I have colleagues who are really doing a lot of kind of work into how to overcome that with using technologies like cryptocurrencies, bitcoins, and the blockchain as a way of managing smart contracts and kind of locating intellectual property within the payment structure. So that's kind of quite radical new technology that could ensure the future sort of livelihood of musicians and creatives of all kinds.
I was going to say, and artists as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So that continues to be an issue. And the other issue I think we explored with both the radio and the music reports was, the idea of streaming. And actually, when we wrote the music reports, it wasn't actually possible to stream music at that time. But we predicted in the report that in 5 or 10 years, everyone would be streaming music directly from the cloud rather than downloading individual music to their device and then playing it locally.
Interesting.
So that's obviously completely ubiquitous now, commonplace. Yeah. But I think what's going to happen now is that those experiences will become much more personalised and reactive. So I've been doing a lot of work myself over the years with making pieces of music that are not fixed, but they're actually reacting and changing as you listen to them according to the time of day. Or one of the projects Sean and I worked on was a piece of music that reacted to the weather, and I think that will come about in the next 10 years.
And on that note, Nick Ryan, thank you very much. Thank you so much.
As
indeed.
The Spitfire
as
starts
the
engine.
Isn't that amazing? That's fantastic.
It was amazing, actually, listening to the Spitfire at the end. It was so apt to have that finish off the interview. I'll give you some more information about the DX17, but in the meantime, let's have some travel news now. So we go back to the DX17. We heard from Alicia Gurney. She is the head of master planning engagement, and she was telling us the context with which they wanted to commission Nick Ryan. And then, of course, we heard from the Nick Ryan, the BAFTA award-winning sound composer and artist. He's an audio specialist, and he's actually widely recognised as a leading thinker on the future of sound. I thought that was really key, considering we are in radio and how much I love radio. And his extensive and diverse practice as an audio expert involves working on film, motion graphics, animation, TV, drama and documentary, and also interactive media, technology, innovation and instrumental making and orchestra ensemble. And I've got to say, the DX17 is quite incredible. Now you would ask, why do they think call it the DX17? Well, the DX was the actual letters, DX, was the airfield identification code for Duxford during the Second World War. And it also forms part of the airfield signal square, which is visible from the sky. While 17 is a reference, of course, to DX and Duxford Centenary 1917 to 2017. And also DX also describes the act of listening on a long-distance shortwave radio, linking the radiophonic design of the installation with Duxford's remarkable history. Now, I bet you have been to Duxford. I've been a few times with my children, but it's discovering it again by working there has made it equally fantastic. So I really urge you to go along to the DX17 if you can. It's an incredible experience. You literally walk in. It's quite dark inside and hazy, and you're given these earphones with a receiver. And when the whole sound sculpture illuminates, you are able with your receiver to align it underneath the light beams at the front of the sound sculpture, and you immediately hear memories of Duxford. And then all around the sound sculpture are white pools of light that you can actually touch the sound sculpture and again hear sounds and memories, anecdotes of Duxford. It's absolutely amazing because basically the audio is encoded into the light and decoded into the receiver. And it's about a 14 to 15 minute show. And you've got this amazing, as Nick says, this soundscape outside your earphones too. It's incredibly cinematic. And everybody I know that has walked out has felt very, very emotional listening to all the amazing memories of Duxford. And it is like the voices are speaking to you. So I really urge you to go along.